Covering the crew all season long on WTMJ, it's Brewers Extra Innings. Now live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee at the Avenue, here is your host, Dominic Cotroneo.
Oh, man, it's just, you had him just so close. Man, these games, man, you just nail biters all the way through and just really get your blood pumping, right? We're not talking about Tuesday's game? Got it. Not fun tonight. 13-2, the final. I'm Dominic Cotroneo. Yeah, that was not a fun one to come back to after last night, watching that one from afar and, you know, great pitcher's duel and fun game. This one, not so much. It was 8-0 after two innings. And quite frankly, it was nearly very different. 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620 if you are staying up late with us here tonight. But the other thing to talk about here with Jerry Augustine joining us here, Augie, I don't want to just be all doom and gloom tonight. It was not fun, to say the least. We'll talk about Colin Ray here in a moment. But let me just start with sort of the one little moment of glass half full of this. The Brewers, and you can react to this in either direction. The Brewers, this was only their eighth loss this season by five or more runs. Why is that number significant? Five or more runs is considered a blowout in baseball standards. So this was only the eighth time all year. Where do you think that ranks in Major League Baseball, Augie, among teams that have lost games by five or more runs?
That is a statistic that, you know, when you look at five or more runs, you figure you're going to go through times when you're going to just struggle and the other teams are going to be scoring some runs. I say that's got to be close to one of the best in baseball, because by five or less runs, that is amazing. That means that this team has been in contention almost every game. I think that's going to be a highly rated statistic.
That's a good instinct there, Augie, because they're number one. It's the fewest blowout losses in baseball. And it that's why I think sometimes a lot of us overreact to a blowout loss like this, where it happens so rarely we forget, like, oh, wait, like, this isn't normal, like, you know, especially for one of the youngest teams in baseball. I mean, for instance, just going down the list here, the Orioles have 18 of them. The Yankees have 19 of them. The Padres have 19 of them. The Astros have 21 of them, right? So it's just, it's not like a perfect stat. And like, this would be the last little bit of glass half full. Then we'll talk about Colin Ray tonight. But it's just like, okay, they've been blown out very rarely. It's an anomaly. It only counts as one loss. And it's something that the Brewers are going to wear it on the chin tonight. You put it in the garbage bin, throw it out, then you take that garbage bin and you set it on fire. I mean, just no reason to remember this game for literally any reason, other than Jake Bauer's getting his first career strikeout.
That was pretty good. I'll tell you what, he made a good pitch there, and you could see the excitement he took. When he threw the ball, he waved to the catcher, took him to throw the ball to the side for his first strikeout. Something unique in the game of baseball. But, you know, you go back to the five run, the eight games, that is what a credit to the pitching staff and the defense on this ball club. That's really pretty special. But Jake Bauers, what a great night for him to go out there. His ERA suffered a little bit, but he got the big strikeout.
He got the strikeout indeed. All right, now let's actually talk about what actually went down for the Brewers today, as they fall 13-2 to the Giants. This series is level at a game apiece. Rubber match coming tomorrow. When you look at it, oh, by the way, before I get into this scoreboard watching, this game will go final by the time we're done with the show. The Dodgers have taken an 8-7 lead on the Cubs. They're in the bottom of the eighth inning, two outs and two strikes right now. So there's a chance that this game will be over by the end of the next segment, and the Brewers' magic number will still get better by one. So that's a quick little bit of scoreboard watching. Colin Ray in the first inning tonight, Augie. I mean, there was a chance for him to get out of that inning with no damage, having runners on the corners with two outs and an 0-2 count on Lamont Wade. But in the blink of an eye, a pass ball, an RBI single, and a two-run homer instantly, didn't even just put him on his back foot. It put him up against the ropes in the first inning when he was one pitch away from keeping it scoreless in the first. What did you see from his reaction to that tough first frame?
Well, you know what? It just seems like in his last several starts, he's really struggled early in the game. And, you know, if you look at if you look at his statistics over the last four starts, each game he's gone four innings and given up, you know, one game he had 392 pitches, today 374, 75, which means he's been giving up some runs. And I think when we talk about Colin Ray, he is so good at making adjustments and battling back and being able to pitch to the strike zone by pitching to the outside parts of the strike zone. He gets ahead of hitters. But it just seemed like tonight he struggled with being able to locate his pitches. And not only was it fastball, but it was actually all his pitches. But I'm going to bring something up that's kind of interesting, Dom, and I'd like to get your thought on it, because you look so much into the statistics of the game and the analytics of the game. C.B. Buckner was the umpire tonight. And there's every pitcher has a log on what that umpire calls for balls and strike. What is he? Is he a low ball umpire? Does he call on the inside part of the plate? Does he give a little bit on the outside part of it? D.B. Buckner is a high ball umpire. And I think that for tonight, it just looked like Colin Ray had a little bit of problem getting that ball in the upper part of the strike zone for strikes on a consistent basis. He couldn't get there. He's the style of pitcher that uses all four quadrants, but he'll throw the ball down in his zone, initiate a ground ball. He'll expand the strike zone, low in the strike zone with his breaking ball. D.B. Buckner, being a little bit of a high ball umpire, I think could have had a little bit of effect where Colin Ray just couldn't find that magic pitch or that area of the strike zone where he felt comfortable to throw.
I think there's something to that, especially because Ray is a guy that does thrive in the zone and thrives on the edges. And if you don't know if you're going to get the edges, and let's also be clear, C.B. Buckner is not the reason the Brewers lost this game. But when it comes to Ray, yeah, I know what you're saying there, though, Augie. When it comes to Ray and his effectiveness, it all does come back to the fastball, right? And his multitude of fastballs. When it's the four-seamer sneaks up on guys, and it's like, oh my gosh, that one didn't move. And then the sinker was having some really good movement early. The cutter has still been a hit or miss pitch for him, but as you react as a pitcher, the opponent is all over my cutter and my fastball, I got to find something else to attack them with. I don't have confidence in my cutter, and all of a sudden I'm hanging my slider, the sweeper. You're kind of feeling naked out there, right? Because that's what Colin Ray went through tonight. They were all over his heater. He wasn't locating it on the edges like he normally does, and he did not have a secondary pitch to get him out of the woods.
I think there was one pitch in that first inning that kind of spelled where Colin Ray was tonight. I don't know if it was a 1-2 pitch or a 2-2 pitch. He threw a 2-1 pitch. He threw to Ramos, and the ball just, it was on the inside part of the plate, and it looked like the ball was probably 6 inches, 8 inches inside, and Ramos swung and missed it. And, you know, it just looked like right there that he – usually Colin Ray, he'll be pretty precise on that inside part of play. Like you just said, he is one of the best pitchers in the Brewers, on the Brewers ball club, and in baseball that really pitches to the edges and pitches to zones. And it just seemed like he just couldn't find that good feel tonight with all his pitches, and I think that made a big difference.
Yeah, I agree entirely. We'll overreact a little bit coming up in the next segment, talk about some playoff implications, if you will. Also, got some good news from Los Angeles. Back with an update from that game after this, here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Coming up, more Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Come.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Brewers Extra Innings is brought to you by Fifth Third Bank. The local Milwaukee team, Fifth Third Bank, also knows how to hit it out of the park. They've been serving businesses in the area for nearly 15 years, offering industry-specific expertise and local decision-making capabilities to help your business succeed. It's commercial banking value that only Fifth Third can deliver. Fifth Third Bank, National Association, member FDIC. With Jerry Augustine, I'm Dominic Catronio. Update from Chavez Ravine. The Dodgers have opened up a 10-7 lead now over the Cubs. Tommy Edman, back-to-back multi-homer games for the former Cardinal, still killing the Cubs. So if that result holds, Michael Kopech's on the mound right now for the Dodgers. If that result holds, the magic number will still fall to 8, and the Brewers remaining 8.5 clear of the Cubs here in the division. Let's overreact a little bit here, Augie. I opened it up to social media in reaction to Colin Ray and what tonight's start meant for him, and he's hit a bit of a speed bump here since the great start he had against the Guardians. And you can even go back one before that against the Dodgers when he had the big five-run inning. But Ray's leaking a little bit of oil right now. So I just simply asked the Twitterverse, because they obviously speak for the world, about, hey, what's your rotation right now? Because we can't quickly forget that he's kind of been great since the beginning of August, right? Seven shutout against the Braves in Atlanta. Then he had the clunker against the Dodgers. Seven shutout against the Guardians. Then four into the seventh inning against the A's. Not mad about that. Three earned runs and only four innings against the Reds. Only four innings and a shortened start by design against the Cardinals. And then today, 10 earned runs and a career worst outing for him. A lot of folks already taking Ray off their playoff rotation. I'm not ready to do that yet, personally. But I guess I asked to you, what would your playoff rotation look like right now since the playoffs start in about 3 weeks' time?
You go with Freddie Peralta and Colin Ray to start. I think you stay with that. They've been there all year long. And the one thing about Colin Ray is he just makes some adjustments. He's gone through a little bit of a rut now, but he's going to get several starts to get back in, and it's going to be against some pretty good teams. I go there. I think that's the next group is where I really struggle, because I think you got, if you go by matchups, you might want to think. And the other day I was talking and I said, you got Tobias Myers and you got Cervelli and you got Montas. If you look at those three guys, all three of them are really throwing the ball very well. And you look like Montas last time out, what do you go? Six innings, two hits. Gave up three runs and had 10 strikeouts, threw the ball extremely well. But you got to look at what the matchup is going to be, who you play in the playoffs. And then when you look at some of these teams, when you look at the playoffs, if you play the Padres, you look up from the left-hand side. They're pretty good from the left-hand side, yes. They're strong from the right side. We all know what they have on the right side. But you got Cronenworth and Arias and Wade and Merrill and Peralta from the left side. If you look at the D-backs, they got Peterson and Carroll and Perdue and Marte. It was a switch hitter. They're pretty good. The Mets and the Braves, I think, probably are more dominant on the right-hand side. So I think if you would play either the Mets or the Braves, you're thinking probably a right-hand pitcher. And then it's just a matter of who you feel is throwing the ball the best at that time. I really like the way, and we talked about it last time, the way Tobias Myers is pitching the ball. He's risen to the occasion. He's made adjustments, throwing the ball very well. But I'll tell you what, Frankie Montas has really been throwing the ball in Cervelli last night, threw the ball very well. So I think it's going to have an impact on what the matchups are and who you play.
I agree with the first two. I have long time said Freddie would be my two and Ray would be my one. I think today I've come closer to flipping it. I'm not quite flipping it. I'm not taking Ray out of my rotation. But here's one thing I know that they're going to do, and that you took the word out of my mouth with matchups. I would be flabbergasted if any of the starters on the Brewers get to face a lineup for a third time. And here's why. You can do piggybacks. You can get creative because, quite frankly, your strength right now is not your traditional starters. Your strength right now is multi-inning swingmen, if you will. And it's feeling a whole lot like 2018, right, where that team didn't really have bona fide starters, right? Where, I mean, you had a couple of guys, obviously, but the strength was in the back end of the bullpen. Whereas right now you look at it, you know, I could see a scenario where maybe Freddie starts game one, he goes two times through the order, then Aaron Ashby comes in throwing demon sinkers, right? Then game two, you start Colin Ray, the opposing team loads up the lineup with lefties, then D.L. Hall follows up right behind him. And then in game three, you got Frankie Montas throwing fireball fastballs, and then, oh, no, by the way, now we got a junk baller, sinker slider, curveball guy with Savali, and then, oh, here comes Devin Williams, or here comes Trevor McGill, here comes Yoel Piamps. I don't think this is going to be traditional in the slightest, because the Brewers' strength is the guys that aren't necessarily at the front of their rotation, and it's not about a knock of like the guys that they have, but it's more about saying, pitch to your strengths, make sure you get innings to the guys that you want to have innings out of them. I don't think we see a single Brewers starter in a wild card series, and yes, I'm punting to say a wild card series, gets to face a lineup a third time through, pitch to their strengths, and then get to your bread and butter.
You know what? That is a good point. Now, I'm going to take you back a little bit. You said 2018. I'm going to take you all the way back to 2011, the St. Louis Cardinals. The St. Louis Cardinals went all the way. And I think, if I'm not right, you'd have to go back and look. I don't think a starter went five innings. I think it was their bullpen was so good. Or you talk about the Kansas City Royals when they won it. That bullpen was so good. I know they had starters that went a little bit about five innings. But I think in 2011, I don't think many pitchers went that five innings or got to five innings. It was that bullpen. You brought up a great point. When you've got the left-hand pitching and the bullpen that the Brewers have right now with the luxury of McGill and Williams to finish it up with Piamps, and, you know, whether you go with Hudson, Milner, and Koenig, Koenig's going to be there. He's been throwing the ball somewhere. Is Mears going to be here, Peguero? But then when you look at Ross is throwing the ball extremely well. Ashby is going to be there. Dean Hall has been throwing the ball excellent. You have a lot of array of different ways to approach teams. And I think by having Ashby and Hall coming back and throwing the ball so well like they have been really helps you set up a way of approaching a team much differently than it was without those two guys.
Yeah, and looking back to the Cardinals, when they advanced out against the Phillies, it was until Chris Carpenter had that complete game shutout and that epic pitcher's duel against Roy Halladay in Game 5, with the only run scoring in the first inning, remember, the double by Schumacher. But you're right, the rest of that series was Tony La Russa just getting creative and trying to figure things out. And, yeah, I think that's what the Brewers are going to be doing moving forward because they lack that super elite, this guy's going to go, you know. I mean, quite frankly, let me turn the tables here, and then we'll wrap up this segment with this. Like, when the Brewers thought they had that guy, Corbin Burns, he didn't do it. I mean, it's not that easy, right? Brandon Woodruff, he did it in 2021, didn't get the chance to do it, obviously, last year. And then Freddie would have done it in 2021, but his pitcher, the pitcher spot came up, so they had to pull him to try to exchange for some offense. So the Brewers haven't had that guy, that Roy Halladay, that Chris Carpenter, that say, get me three times through the order. I just think that the Brewers are not going to, like, there's no rule that says that your starter has to go third time through the order. Why not get it to Aaron Ashby and get it to D.L. Hall as quickly as you can?
Well, I like that. I like the idea. And, the one thing about this pitching staff is they have the ability to do that. They have the ability to go past two times through the order and get into that fifth and sixth inning. That's the abilities when you look at a Freddie Peralta or Colin Ray. When they're on, they're as good as anybody. Tobias Myers has proven where he can get to six innings, and Davalli's been throwing the ball well. Last time out, Montes was just fantastic. It'll be interesting to see what he does tomorrow. But you gift the options. When you have the options of being able to have a Ross and an Ashby and a Hall, and depending on what they're going to do with Hudson and Milner, you have Piamps in there and maybe Mears. Boy, it's going to get interesting. It allows you a lot of options. It allows you a lot of flexibility. And I think you brought up a good point. This could be set up a way where the starting pitchers will never see that third time through the lineup. And it might be a very interesting way to go, but the Brewers have that style of pitching staff where they can do it.
And also, if their offense is out to a 4-0 lead and they're, let's say, Freddie Peralta is through five innings on just one hit, he's going to stay out there. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. He's going to stay out there and that sort of thing. So they have that flexibility. I'll keep you for one more quick segment, but first, breaking news from Chavez Ravine. Final. Dodgers win 10-8. So despite how crappy tonight was, Augie, the Brewers still improved by one in their magic number. The magic number goes down 1-8. The soonest they could clinch would be on Sunday. That would take four wins and four losses. But it's looking more and more likely the Brewers could clinch at home next week, which would be very exciting. Let's find a silver lining. Let's find something positive from tonight's 13-2 blowout loss. You notice we haven't been talking much about it because no one wants to talk about a 13-2 loss and overreact to it. More with Augie after this on 620 WTMJ.
On deck, more Brewers Extra Innings. This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Brewers fall in a big way tonight, 13-2. Colin Ray, 10 earned runs. Yeah. We talked about him for quite a bit. I'll get to some of the responses on Twitter as well about the rotation. We'll talk about that in a moment. But, Augie, let's challenge ourselves here for a second. Let's find something positive to pull from tonight's game, which is really tough to do, and I'm not being facetious here. I've got one in mind, but I'll let you have the floor here first, Augie. Is there anything you're going to pull from this one?
Hobie Milner. I think when you look at Hobie Milner, we just talked about him. He came in Sunday and gave up that big home run. Yeah, he threw a knuckle curveball. The ball got up over the plate. Hilliard was able to hit the ball in the ballpark. And, you know, I really downed from him. You could see he hung his head, battled back, and got through that inning. He needed to come out and have a good, solid, positive inning. And I think he did that. He came out, threw the ball really well, had two punch outs, threw the ball really well, kept the ball in the good spot of the zone. He wasn't throwing the ball over the middle of the plate. He got the ball down where he needed to, pitched on the inside part of play when he had to. I think a real positive thing, and he needed to have one, was Hobie Milner tonight.
I agree. I like that call, too. And for folks wondering, you know, why would that be a positive? Look, somebody needs to pitch garbage time innings. And every pitcher wants to get something out of those innings. And I'm not saying the Brewers are suddenly going to flip Hobie Milner into pitching leverage again. But for a guy that is still under team control for next year, you want him to find his confidence again. He has had some bad luck this season. For him to have a clean, like you said, clean set of innings, I thought was really important for him. Now, without Bryce Wilson on this team, for what Milner and Peguero did tonight was thankless work, but the Brewers bullpen will thank them tomorrow if they are needed behind Frankie Montas, given the chance at winning this series. One guy that I want to bring up is Garrett Mitchell, who didn't even start the game because Blake Snell, a lefty, was starting the game. Garrett comes off the bench, hits a left-on-left curveball against Snell, a rocket to center field for a double. That was actually the first hit allowed on the curveball to a lefty by Blake Snell. I know that sounds pretty specific, but hear me out. I mean, Blake Snell's an elite left-on-left guy. And remember, Garrett had that ice-cold stretch in the middle of August during that long homestand in which he went 0 for 18. Since that stretch ended against the Guardians, including tonight, he is now 17 for his last 60. That's nearly 330. That's a 283 average. But with that, he's got four doubles, two triples, three homers. I like what I'm seeing right now from Garrett Mitchell. He seems to have found himself out of the funk he was in.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a great call right there. I'll tell you one, he hit a breaking ball off of Snell. Snell's got a really good breaking ball, but the way he stayed with it, went right with that pitch and hit it to center field for that double. I also like the hustle. I don't know what they – did they call it a single?
Yeah, they called it an error. I imagine that's going to get flipped. He might have two doubles by the end of the night.
I'll tell you what. I liked what he – right out of the batter's box, you saw him when he hit that ball. He was going – and he made it, he hustled. It was a hustle double. Those are big plays. That's a sign when a player gets out of that batter's box and gets everything that he's capable of because he has good speed is really important. So if you really looked, if they changed that, man, he had two doubles tonight, and the second one was definitely a good hustle double, and that's good to see from Garrett Mitchell.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Augie, you've been up late enough with us the last two nights. Last night was a quick one. Of course, I bring the long one and the clunker as well. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, my friend.
Okay, we'll turn it around tomorrow. It'll be a good game tomorrow. It'll be interesting to see how Fred Montes goes up there, what he does, Frankie Montes, how he does tomorrow after pitching such a great game last time out. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, and in a ballpark, he's pitched plenty in as an opponent when he was with the Oakland A's. Appreciate you, Augie.
All right, take care. We'll see you tomorrow night.
All right, Jerry Augustin on WTMJ. We'll talk a little bit more about the rotation. A couple of tweets have come in here, a couple of texts as well, 855-616-1620. Here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Coming up, more Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ. This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Talk a little bit about the playoff rotation and what all that means, and It kind of comes with the caveat here. Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Brewers fall 13-2, but we're done talking about the game. The expectation, unfortunately, at this point. Let's be real for a second now. Let's be honest with each other. This team's going to the wild card round. Okay? I mean, it's just, it's clear now. And they've got to wrap up the division as quickly as possible. They're at 83-62. The Dodgers, with their victory tonight over the Cubs, they improved to 87-59. So four games up in the win column. That's really five games because you don't have the tiebreaker on them. No, by the way, the Phillies also won tonight. They now are in the one seed at 88-58. And in case you were wondering who has the tiebreaker between the Dodgers and the Phillies do. So if the Phillies and the Dodgers end up tied, the number one seed would go to the Phillies. They went 5-1 against the Dodgers this year. With all that being said, I think you're likely bound for the wild card round, which, look, I know folks wanted that bye, and it feels like a way that you can get through with this patched-together pitching staff. The Brewers have to prove, look, if you're going to win the whole dang thing, you're going to win a series at some point. And I know folks think it's fluky or like all this. We can't say, oh, it's fluky when we moved on from a one game. Now, a one game is fluky. A three-game series, you should be able to handle it. Now, if the playoffs started tomorrow, the Mets won again today in dramatic fashion. They won 6-2 over the Blue Jays when they were getting no hit into the ninth inning. The Braves lost to the Nationals tonight, so they flip-flop again in the last spot in the wild card race. Right now, the Mets are in the last spot. The Braves are one game out. The Cubs remain five games out, but that's really six games out because they do not have a tiebreaker. If there's a Cubs fan in your mentions, if there's a Cubs fan in your life, and they start talking smack, and they're feeling like they're in this race, and they just lost to the Dodgers tonight, remind them how many tiebreakers they hold. Just hold up a zero. They don't hold any tiebreakers. So every deficit that they face, the Cubs add one to it. So I just want to make that clear to the Cubs fans in your life. With that being said, if the playoffs started tomorrow, it would be the Mets, a Mets team that has a lot of powerful righties. Okay, you think of Lindor, switch hitter, really good from both sides. Alonso, Vientos, then McNeil's out for the year. He's a lefty. Nimmo's a lefty. He plays against both sides. Starling Marte, a righty. You look at that team. There's not a ton of pop on the club. You'll see old friend Tyrone Taylor, but maybe they're one that sets up for a Freddy Peralta, Colin Ray, fill-in-the-blank game. You don't necessarily need lefties against those guys. Let's say it's the Braves that sneak in there. You got Ozzie Albies, who's a switch hitter, who's better from the right side. So you don't want to necessarily start a lefty against him. Kelnick's a lefty. He probably wouldn't start a game against a left-handed starter. You've got Olsen in there. Riley won't be available in a wild card round because of his broken hand. Then you got two dangerous righties that torch lefties in Soler and Ozuna. So it's like, do I really want to start a lefty against Ozuna? All right, I'm back to the righties, Freddie and Ray. That's where these matchups come back into what we were talking about. The most common combination, when I asked on social media, what would you like to see game 1, 2, and 3? Freddie was the overwhelming favorite for game 1. Which, how the times have changed and why we play the whole season, right? Freddie was the overwhelming favorite for game 1. Tobias Myers was the favorite for game 2. And then it was, quite frankly, within the margin of error, anything goes in game 3. I mean, that's quite frankly literally the rules. 4 votes for a bullpen game. 4 votes for Frankie Montas. 3 votes for Tobias Myers. 2 votes for Colin Ray. 2 votes for Aaron Civale. 2 votes for DL Hall. I mean, it is all over the place, which I think is an indicator for good health of this team. The fact that you have multiple options that you can go with, and it goes back to that big segment we talked about with Augie, that you can use a multitude of players. Nobody says you have to use 3 bona fide starters. You can use 5, like we saw DL Hall go 5 outs yesterday. We've seen Colin Ray come in after an opener. We've seen Freddy Peralta pitch into the 6th inning. They are going to be different with that. But I think now, for these final 2.5 weeks, the narrative switches to this team's going to the wild card round. How do I want to align the pitching to have them ready? And, oh, by the way, you face the Mets in that final week of the season. I'm sure the Braves are going to be asking, hey, can you play your guys against those guys? I mean, it's going to be interesting down the stretch here for if the Braves, because the Braves and the Mets play each other that final week as well. That will decide the tiebreaker. The Mets are about to play the Phillies for the weekend. That's going to be spicy. I'm excited. I just really am excited because it's a nirvana, if you will. It's, all right, this team's going to the wild card. This team's going to be in the best of three. I know fans are nervous about it, but, hey, it beats the alternative of not being in it at all. Let's react to it once those three games are done. But this team's probably going to the wild card round. I'm not burying them. I'm just telling you the odds, but, hey, never tell me the odds, right? So let's see how things shake out. Who knows? They can go on a 7-game winning streak out of nowhere here and put themselves right into contention. I'd be all for it, but if you fail to plan, you plan to fail, right? So you got to start thinking ahead of what do you want to do in that final week heading into a wild card series. It's enough of me yapping. Let's hear from the manager, Pat Murphy. That's coming up after the break here on 620 WTMJ.
On deck, more Brewers Extra Innings. This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
This one text about the rotation. I'd go with Peralta, but I'm moving Frankie to the second spot. We'll see how Frankie does tomorrow in a familiar setting against the Giants. Welcome back, Brewers Extra Innings Late Night Edition. We got two more of these late night shows. Same time and place tomorrow, and then same time, new place in Arizona on Friday. And I shouldn't say tomorrow. I should say later tonight since we've crossed midnight. We're into Thursday. I'm Dominic Catronio, staying up late with you here. I want to remind you that Brewers Extra Innings is also brought to you in part by Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. And they offer 5% off service for veterans and seniors all year long. Make sure to mention this offer when you're scheduling your appointment, too. Again, that's 5% off all service for veterans and seniors. Visit Sider.com today. That's Seider.com. Families helping families since 1912. Another tweet here that's rolled in here late night with us. I'd say give Tobias game three if need, so that way you can use him to open up an NLDS. I like that. Late, but maybe Freddie game one, split Ray and Hall for game two, and then Myers for game three. And then maybe you don't need Myers for game three, and you use him in a game one of an NLDS. And remember, we gave you the stat after Myers' last great start back here at home, how he's become the stopper, right? He has an incredible record when the Brewers are following a loss. I don't think Tobias can be my game one starter, but he can definitely be a game two or game three candidate. All right, that's enough for me. Here's a little bit from Pat Murphy's post-game media session earlier tonight from San Francisco.
Collins has been such a warrior for us all season for a couple years now. He's 12-4, you know, and the records don't always indicate things, but Collins been a horse for us. And then, you know, things got off to a bad start. The first ball of the game that was hit, I don't know if the wind took it or what, but that's normally a catch for sure. A ball's not hit that hard and it falls in for a double. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's got two outs, two strikes, and then he misses his location pretty badly on a two-strike pitch, and it gets and the guy's running, so Williams getting up to throw, and the ball gets under his glove. So, you know, it's off to a bad start right there. Shouldn't it? You know, neither should have happened. And then it seemed like every ball they hit was there was no fielder there. So. a tough one, but Collin hung in there and gave us four innings, so we didn't have to go into our pen any deeper. And yeah, he didn't have his great stuff, but I'm confident. You know, he's done so much for us. I'm confident. You know, he's probably a little worn out, like a lot of guys are. But there's no time for that. He'll bounce back.
I was just gonna ask you that, Murphy. His last couple,
yeah,
just kind of okay.
Yep.
You think he is kind of.
I'm sure he is. Yeah, I'm sure he's. I'm sure he's past his innings he's ever done in his life. And sometimes you go through this, but he outing like this, he'll regroup mentally. He'll regroup.
And then on the flip side too, you got Snell on the mound. It's going to be a tough night, you know. Anyway, probably when he's pitching.
Right.
And
well, I mean, I thought, you know, we had him at 60 plus pitches in the third inning, and. You know, if it's 0-0 and you get him out of there in the fifth, right. You know, who knows?
Or if you've said your team hasn't played games like this.
Not many.
Does it hit them different when
they haven't played? I think they, yeah, I think it's unusual for them. I mean, there's There's only been a couple of those, you know, so handful, right? Like five, four.
Yeah. We all come. Encouraged by what you saw from Hobie tonight?
I am. Yeah, I was really pleased with Hobie. So Mike made that comment earlier. Mike came in here, thought he was going to be funny. He goes, "Well, Hobie pitched good." I'm trying to be funny, he's trying to. It was the comedy. It was the comedy theme. You know, Mike was trying to stay on the comedy theme. Thanks, Mike. He's so helpful. You know, he's a helpful man.
Did Bowers make you smile when he throws his first strikeout in?
Oh, yeah. That was his first strikeout ever? Mm-hmm. He's pitched like six times. It took him a while.
You look for stuff like that to lighten the mood, though, don't you?
Yeah, you do. It does usually bring some levity, you know. But
I mean, it reminds me of, remember when Rowdy Tellez got a strikeout on a botched count on the game that the Brewers blew out the Marlins like 14-2 last year that clinched the playoff spot? Yeah, just break the levity, you know, break the tension. It's not that serious, man. They lost. Still gained a game of the magic number, right? So looking more and more likely like they could clinch at home, and the celebration will be here at the ballpark in Milwaukee. I mean, unless they win the next four and the Cubs lose the next four, which sign me up for that, but that would be really fun, honestly. I'm excited to see what that could be with the Phillies coming to town, too, because it doesn't get any easier after tomorrow. No traditional highlights segment. Let's just kind of look ahead and see what the remaining couple weeks will need to entail for the Brew Crew. They fall 13-2 tonight, but we'll start looking ahead after this on 620 WTMJ.
Coming up, more Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ. This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
So this is normally where we do the highlights. I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. There weren't many highlights. Brewers fall 13-2. I'll give you one, though. One moment of levity that we were just talking about. Jake Bowers, his first career strikeout. 3-2 pitch. Struck him out swinging. Jake Bowers got his first big league K, and he keeps the baseball. Atta baby Jake. There's your only highlight of the night. Yes, that was pretty fun. I really like Jake Bowers. I really enjoyed his company this season. Let's look ahead here now, shall we? Tomorrow, it'll be Frankie Montas getting the ball for the Crew. As he's got a tall task ahead of him now, as he's going to try to be the stopper and go up against the rookie Hayden Birdsong, who the Brewers saw last week or a week and a half ago and handled him pretty good. The Brewers against the Diamondbacks look like this, as the Crew, I'm pulling up the game notes right now, beg your pardon, but the Crew here looking ahead, they've got a pretty good setup for their rotation to try to settle down the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, if we go by days, this is not confirmed by Brewers PR, but if we go by days and like your fifth day, the Brewers would go Tobias Myers on Friday, Freddie Peralta on Saturday, and Aaron Savali on Sunday. But you could do, like, let's say, D.L. Hall on Sunday and put Savali back one more day against the Phillies, or you change things up. Because as of now, Colin Ray, Frankie Montas, Tobias Myers would be the rotation against the Phillies next week. Now, do you flip things around and put maybe D.L. Hall on Monday and give Colin an extra day and arrange things? This all depends on what you want to do in that final week of the year, but these are wheels that are churning. Do you skip Colin Ray for a turn through his rotation and that sort of thing? And do you want to navigate the rotation so that you don't have the same guys starting against the Diamondbacks back-to-back weekends? And Diamondbacks, they're swinging it, man. They just won a series against the Texas Rangers, and the Rangers have kind of been the most disappointing team in baseball this year. Hung 14 on the board today against the Rangers. And that's another team that's going to finish above 500 for sure to improve the Brewers' record if they can win those games in that regard. And a reminder, their footing in the wild card race is not set in stone. It is jam-packed. San Diego has come back down to earth with them, too. Right now, if the playoffs started tomorrow, Arizona has the edge. Now, Arizona and San Diego play each other for the final week of the season. That also will determine the tiebreaker. Arizona is up by a half game on the Padres. Padres lost to the Mariners tonight. Then you've got the Mets, one game clear of the Braves. Now, let's say the Brewers in these seven games against the Diamondbacks win both series outright, go 5-2 against the Diamondbacks. All of a sudden, that could slide them potentially to the three spot. If the Mets continue to win, they could be in the two spot. You could see Arizona again, right? So there's a lot of familiarity going here. And even if San Diego continues to slide, they could fall themselves in the three seed. And quite frankly, of these four teams that the Brewers could face in a wild card matchup, Arizona, San Diego, New York, or Atlanta, I do not want to face San Diego the most. Quite frankly, they were my preseason World Series pick, and they're playing like it, at least in the middle portion of the season. So that's where I'm looking right now. Kim, the Brewers, they're not necessarily playing spoilers because they're trying to clinch a division and move on because they're still going to clinch this division at some point. Their magic number still improved today. They're still up by 8.5 games, really 9.5 games on the Cubs to this point in the year. 83-62. There's still 17 games to go. Snap your fingers. It's going to be over with. But tomorrow, it is all about win tonight. Or I should say, tonight, it is all about win tonight as the Brewers will try to wrap up the series with a dub and head quick hour 15 flight from San Francisco down to Arizona. That is going to do it for our program tonight. If you listen to this whole show live, I appreciate you. If you listen to the podcast, I also appreciate you. A reminder for these West Coast games, Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts, or on YouTube as well. We're over there as well on the 620 WTMJ YouTube page. All these are streamed live and available in archive form after the fact. If you're a YouTube folk as well, you can see my face via my webcam here in my office here in downtown Milwaukee. That's going to do it for my program here tonight. Thank you to everybody who listened. Back at it again tomorrow. Our producer staying up late with us has been Max Meyerson. I'm Dom Catronio. Good night. Brewers fall. Don't worry. Just keep on swinging.